This is about defeating and destroying BRICS. So this is not at Trump's direction. This is a strategy that's developed both within the intelligence community and with key members of the financial community, the banker community.
Larry Johnson, good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. There's really not a person I'd rather talk to than you right now, and I really mean that. So this escalation with Iran and Israel and really the U.S. has been, we've been talking about it for a better of 9 months now. So I want to get your opinion now as bombs are being lobbed by both Israel and Iran. Where are we at right now in the moment, and where is this going? And I'm afraid about what you're going to say.
Yeah, I think the United States is going to end up attacking Iran, and that this war will expand, and ultimately it's going to involve both Russia and China. I think that's where we're headed, unfortunate. This has nothing to do with Iran's alleged efforts to get build a nuke. You know, the U.S. intelligence community, and let me emphasize what that is. The way these community judgments are reached is that senior analysts from the Central Intelligence Agency, from the Defense Intelligence Agency, from the State Department Bureau of Intelligence and Research, INR, from the National Security Agency, and from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. They're the ones that take photographs. So the CIA collects human intelligence, as does DIA, as does State Department INR. Those are all sort of three human intelligence sources. NSA sucks up all communications. NGA gets overhead photography. So that's the all source intelligence. And the way everybody weighs in, said, yeah, this is what we've seen that would suggest they have a weapon, or this is what we've seen suggesting that they're trying to build one. This is what we've seen suggesting that they're not. So when Tulsi Gabbard in March went before Congress and read that assessment, that wasn't Tulsi Gabbard giving her opinion. She had been sitting around drinking coffee with some folks and said, hey, what do you think? No, this was a formal community judgment. Now, if CIA had disagreed, CIA or DIA or NSA, any of those could have submitted a dissenting opinion. They could have said, no, we disagree. We think you're wrong. CIA didn't do that in March. My concern now is the combination of Donald Trump, the other night on the plane, said, I don't care what Tulsi says. Well, it's not what Tulsi says, you dumbass. It's what the intelligence community, looking at all source intelligence, it's what they know. And they know it better than you do, Donald Trump. But no, he personalizes it. I don't care what she says. No, it wasn't her opinion. It was the opinion of those agencies. But more importantly, now we get the word that John Ratcliffe, the director of the CIA, is out telling people yesterday or the day before yesterday, oh yeah, Iran's on the 1 yard line. They're just about ready to get a nuke. This, the CIA, if that's what they believe, that should have been in the report back in March. It was not there. This is a classic case of a politicized CIA director twisting the intelligence to tell the White House what it wants to hear so that they can take us to war. That's where this is headed.
So I want to work that out a lot more here. So this, and I would agree with you, this information, and I say this, I've been hearing about Iran having a nuke, it seems like, for 25 to 30 years. And
I can show, Eddie, I don't know if you've seen it. I can show you the videotape. I posted it at Sonar 21 in one of my articles. Of Bibi Netanyahu since 1995, claiming that, oh, Iran was just weeks away, a month away, a year away from getting a nuke. He's been doing that. He's been on that shtick for 30 plus years.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's my memory as well. And so I'm very suspicious of this. So is Trump, is he acting on faulty intelligence, or is the CIA, the deep state, if you would, manipulating him into going into war? Is this all about Netanyahu, whatever legal problems and trouble he's in back in Israel, him being aggressive and trying to get out of this? So why is really what I'm trying to figure out.
No, he's ignoring the intelligence. Tulsi Gabbard presented the intelligence. He's ignoring it.
Trump is ignoring
it. What he's listening to is what Bibi Netanyahu and the Israelis, they're saying, oh, we got really good intelligence. We know. Oh, yeah, you speak with a nice accent, so you must be more intelligent than us. You know, that's sort of how ridiculous it is. So that's where he's going. But again, this has nothing really to do. The nukes are a distraction. This is Saddam Hussein play. You know, we got to stop Iraq and weapons of mass destruction. This is that whole game plan. They pulled it off the shelf, dusted it off, updated it. Now it's Iran, not Iraq.
Yeah, that's what it certainly seems like. And I wanted to verify with somebody like yourself. And that's what I've been sifting through my head. Now, is the goal now, is it going to be regime change? And I don't know exactly what that means. Meaning, I mean, I'm assuming somehow getting the Ayatollah, the religious leaders out, as well as the military leadership out. What exactly are they going for, regime change, and what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, it's broader than that. So most of your broadcasts, as I understand it, you deal a lot with the world of investment and finance, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so this is where this is being played out.
It's all about money, right?
Not just about money. This is about defeating and destroying BRICS. So Trump, and this is not at Trump's direction. This is a strategy that's developed both within the intelligence community and with key members of the financial community, the banker community. So go back to 2022. BRICS was, you know, they've been trying to get BRICS going for several years, but it's just sort of limping along. Russia starts the special military operation. We could go into details how that was provoked. But in response to that, then the West said, okay, we're going to do bone-crushing sanctions. They sanction Russia. And lo and behold, they discover, much to their chagrin, Russia is self-sufficient. Russia doesn't need a damn thing from the United States or Europe. It can build a healthy economy without having to rely upon imports or exports to those places. And its economy starts taking off. And they accelerate. They meet with Xi Jinping in January, February of 2023. And Putin and Xi hug it out there, and they pledge a level of friendship and cooperation never before seen between Russia and China. And then BRICS begins growing and expanding, and Iran now is part of BRICS. In January 17th, 3 days before Trump is inaugurated, Iran and Russia signed a comprehensive security agreement. And the key component of that is the development of this north-south transport corridor, a corridor that stretches from the Indian Ocean, Arabic Sea, up through Iran, through Azerbaijan, the Caspian, and through Russia up to St. Petersburg. The strong economic rationale for this is the import and export of goods in and out of Russia without having to go through the Black Sea, where they could be cut off by a NATO blockade, or having to go through the Suez Canal. It opens up another alternative. We saw just 2 weeks ago, China completed its first overland transport via rail from China, passing through Kazakhstan, going into Iran. So now you've got Iran and China linking up economically in this regard. So that there's that cooperation taking place. Militarily, you've seen Russia and China starting in 2018, and officially in 2019, they did the first joint naval military exercise in the sea, in that Gulf of Sea of Arabia, I guess it's called, Indian Ocean area. And they've continued that every year since. So they did their seventh one in March of this year. And the Iran is a critical piece on the chessboard. It's not a pawn. It's a knight or a bishop, or maybe even a rook, with, you know, Russia and China being the king and queen. And it is taking out Iran as a critical objective for the West to maintain its hegemony. Now, let's also look at the other events that have taken place in the last 3 months. Please. I do not believe in coincidence. The terrorist attack in the Kashmir by a terrorist group out of Pakistan going against India, that was designed to provoke a conflict between China and India, with Pakistan as the proxy in the middle. That failed. China and Pakistan actually have worked out differences over that. They didn't take the bait. But again, this, I believe, was another effort by this financial cabal in the West. Tom Luongo talks about it a lot.
I've had Tom on many times.
Yeah, so it tracks right with you know, what I think his analysis is of trying to break up BRICS. Because BRICS is growing. BRICS represents a fundamental threat to the Western financial order, the ability of the United States and the European bankers to control the system. We've already seen in May that SWIFT has been outpaced by CIPS. CIPS was at the cross-border, inter-country, interbank payment system. Why? Well, SWIFT is basically a buggy whip. You know, it's old technology. It's not secure. Whereas SIPS is digital and it's using blockchain. And people are flowing to that if for no other reason, because SWIFT's a pain in the ass to use. It's not efficient. And you end up spending more money just trying to move money around the world through an outdated email system. That's all it is. And so here's China coming up with this. So you've got these developments. And then this week, they're having the 26th annual St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. You got more countries there, more key leaders of countries. It's quite an event. I was fortunate to be there last year. I hope to be there next year. But it's just, it's the world literally comes together, is building a new economic order outside of the control of Wall Street, the IMF, and the World Bank. That's what this is about in Iran. That's what's on the table.
Okay, so I'm agreeing with everything you said, and also enlightened, if you would. It confirms a lot of my suspicion then. But work out a little more granular what is going on. And thank you. With all of that, really, just on the record, I hope that to educate all my viewers and listeners. Work out now, what's the short-term or any intermediate play here for both Iran and Israel? Because it seems like Iran has been very disabled, if you would, with the help of the U.S. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're wrong, but that's okay.
You're human.
Yeah, well, the error is human, my friend.
Yeah, well, tell me where I'm wrong, and also what's the short-term and longer-term plays with both countries and the U.S. here?
Okay, so Iran is Muhammad Ali doing rope-a-dope. Israel's not even a Joe Frazier, but Israel's punching itself blind, trying to destroy Iran. The problem is Iran is bigger, both physically in terms of geographic size. It has abundance of resources, which Israel does not have. It's got 11 times the population of Israel. And it's got a missile supply that Israel can't even begin to match. And every time Iran fires one of those missiles into Israel, Israel's air defense system tries to defeat those. And we've seen upwards of 10 to 12 air defense missiles from Israel being launched to try to stop one inbound, and they fail to stop it. Now, there's the problem. Those missiles that Israel's firing, the Arrow missiles, the Patriot missiles, those are in limited, very limited quantities and supplies. And the United States, neither the United States nor Israel, has the industrial capability to crank them out at an increased rate. Right now, on the Patriot missile, as an example, each one of those missiles fired, they take, Lockheed Martin produces 550 of them in 1 year. Okay? 1 year. So basically one and a half a day, maybe right. Two. And against one missile, Israel would fire four or five of those and within a minute. Just do the math. It doesn't work out. And so what Iran has done in the early stages of this is they fire, initially they're firing like 100 missiles, 200 missiles, and Israel's shooting off. Israel's basically run out of missiles. Now they're saying they're running short. They'll be out by next week. They're out. Because what we saw today, Iran leisurely launched 15 to 25 ballistic missiles. They struck their targets. They were not intercepted, despite Israeli claims to the contrary. So let's just do the size difference, that differential. Israel with 7 to 8 million people. I don't know how many are still left because the number have fled overseas. A landmass the size of New Jersey. Here's Iran. Its country's three times the size of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Its country is larger than Alaska, which is a huge landmass in the United States. And then it's got 92 million people. So if Israel's having to sit and try to hit targets in this enormous landmass of a country, they've got finite Air Force resources. They got finite missile supplies. They don't have unlimited supply. They can't bomb everything. And we've got a perfect current example of what this means. Look at the disparity of force between Russia and Ukraine. It's really comparable. And we've seen Russia has bombed the hell out of Ukraine over the last three and a half years. Mm-hmm. Yet Ukraine's still intact. They haven't collapsed yet. And the cities aren't all on fire and people aren't fleeing to the countryside. So it just goes to show that with the level of firepower that Russia has against Ukraine, Iran is as strong as Ukraine is militarily.
At least.
Now, here's the other thing that Western intelligence is completely blind on. How many missiles does Iran have? Since I know from my own personal experience working on military exercises more than 20 years ago, where we were looking at how would we attack an Iranian nuclear facility buried underground? Okay, this goes back 20 years. They've been doing this for 20 years. They're building their missiles underground, and they're storing their missiles underground. The only way the West would know how many missiles the Iranians have stored underground is if we got a human source that was part of that process, like their accountant that kept track of them. And to my knowledge, we've never had that. Or we got a signal intercept of them saying, yeah, we produced 200 today and 100, you know. To my knowledge, we don't have that. We don't know exactly how many they have, but my estimate, it would be in the tens of thousands. So that's what Israel's up against. That's why, you know, the initial blow on Friday was carried out with U.S. assistance with a cyber attack. But what was anticipated in the West is taking Iran out of the picture for a week. The Iranian technicians, with the assistance of Russians, got it back up and running in 8 to 10 hours. So that was the first surprise. Second surprise was they didn't think Iran would be able to launch any effective missile strikes. That hasn't happened. So right now you've shut down Ben Gurion Airport, really the only international airport for Israel, apart from some of its military bases. The port in Haifa is shut down. An important refinery in Haifa is shut down. Key government buildings the Weissman Center, a technology, sort of the nuclear technology building, was destroyed. There have been hits today on Israeli military headquarters located near the Ministry of Interior and the Parliament. So, while Iran is putting on this brave face, man, we are kicking ass and taking names, there's a reason they're come begging the United States, oh, come help us, come save us. We can't do this. We need you. Because they can't do it.
Yeah. It doesn't say, it really seems like it's, if it's not already, it's inevitable that we're even more involved than we already are. And pains me to say that it looks like, again, you mentioned Iraq 2.0. I just pray to God that there's no troops on the ground, but it's almost like that's going to be inevitable if it's not happening already under covert operations.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not supposed to say yeah.
No, I mean,
I'm not laughing. I'm just laughing at disbelief. It's just so crazy.
Well, look at what, again, the Western impression, the way Iran is presented to the rest, it's all a lie. And one of the big lies is, oh, they're this oppressive Islamic state. There's no freedom. This massive authoritarianism. Really? Then how the hell did Israel run around and recruit all these operatives to carry out terrorist attacks inside Iran? Because, in fact, the people I've talked to that have been there within the last month and a half, Pepe Escobar, Alistair and Aisling Crook, husband and wife, Max and Anya Blumenthal, husband and wife, Glenn Deason, a Norwegian history professor.
I've had him on.
Yeah, so they've all been there. They're all part of a conference. Dimitri Lascaris has also been there. And what they've seen is Iran's actually a very open society. The oppression of women that was maybe common 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that's not happening now. Aisling and Anya, they felt comfortable going without headscarves. And I forget which one of them told me that they're on the subway and they're watching, this young couple's making out on the subway, just like kids would in North America. So, and the religious police wasn't coming up and pounding them into a pulp. So Iran, if anything, could be faulted for not having a very good counterintelligence service. And that's one of the reasons Israel was so successful initially on June 13th. And there's no denying that Israel carried out a tremendous intelligence operation. But, they forget how deep the strategic depth of these societies, how many layers of bureaucracy, the family relationships, the money, it's not easily topped. This is not a fragile regime like that of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. So, and then the West is perpetuated with the lie that Iran's the number one sponsor of terrorism. It is not, period. I can lay the data out with respect to the claims about Hamas, claims about Hezbollah. The largest terrorist entity in the world today is, if the definition of terrorism, the infliction of violence on civilians for political purposes, that would be Israel, followed in a close second by the United States. And I neither would like to hear that, but as I said, if that's the definition of terrorism, just look at who's killing civilians, who's causing the mayhem. Not Iran. Iran has not invaded. In fact, Iran hasn't invaded a country
since Iraq, right?
Well, years. They didn't invade Iraq. The war that was started in 1981 was started by the United States.
Yeah, right.
We armed Iraq, encouraged Iraq. We gave Iraq the chemical weapons, for God's sake.
Right.
And we supplied Iraq with intelligence. I know, I was very good friends, close friends with Patrick Lang, who'd been the chief of the Defense Intelligence Agency's Middle East section, but he was the one who actually hand-carried the intelligence to Iraq to be used. It planned military operations against Iran. So there's, that's not my word or my imagination. That's a fact.
Yes. Let's work out the tactics and the strategy here. And I'm putting on my taking off my humanitarian hat, if you would, which yeah. I'm just, for the, on the record, I am completely against this war, and I'm pretty much completely against all war, with specifically against national defense when we're looking at invasion here, which this is not the case. But this is so not only ridiculous, but it's just extremely tragic with the loss of human life.
Yeah.
Take off that strategic point of view and the tactics here. So Iran, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, they started attacking tankers, oil tankers in the Straits of Hormuz. So what does that look like? Meaning, do you expect that to continue? Or is that Iran, or is that a false flag?
That will be a false flag. Because, you know, Iran, thanks to the intervention of Russia and China, reconciled with Saudi Arabia. They'd been fighting a proxy war in Yemen with the Saudis since 2015. But last year, as a result of, diplomacy by Russia and China, the Saudis and Iranians buried the hatchet. They came together. So Iran's actually been coordinating with the Saudis, and to a lesser extent with Qatar and with the United Arab Emirate, trying to, get the tensions tamped down, and recognizing as well that China is dependent on a lot of the oil that comes in and out of the Gulf. So I would actually argue that Iran has little incentive to try to disrupt that oil flow for that reason. They would attack U.S. military bases and installations. I have no doubt about that. But they're not going to go after the oil tankers. We saw yesterday, China inserted two ships that are intelligence collection vessels that can track missiles, that can do electronic warfare, interfere with the communications of foreign systems. Those are now in the Persian Gulf. That means they had to be dispatched last week because, I'm not sure what their prior location was, but the fact that they're now in the Persian Gulf, they're there because they've been ordered by the Chinese government to be there. So that's one other sign you get that China lining up to support Iran in this, not just with words. These are some strong deeds. They send a message.
Yeah, and that's where I want to go to next here. So this is going to suck in, if it hasn't already, China and both Russia. Play that out for me, and oh my gosh, and it goes all the way back to whoever it is, and it could be, for all I know, ending the BRICS, but or trying to thwart the BRICS. But yeah, where is this going? It's sucking them in, and then it seems like there'll just be a continual escalation with Russia and China. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, here you have this habit of being right now, Andy. So
I don't know about that.
Let's go to January 17th, when Russia and Iran signed this security cooperation agreement. Now, the articles 1, 2, 3, and 4 dealt with how Russia would assist Iran in the event that Iran was attacked. It was not an explicit defense agreement like Russia has with North Korea, where if North Korea is attacked, then Russia's going to fight on their side. Now, the language is very nuanced, but it still leaves a door open that Russia can help. Well, we found out this week from Vladimir Putin. He was speaking 2 days ago with a group of foreign officials. They were asking lots of questions. One of the questions was about this. And he said, look, we were ready to sign a defense pact with Iran, but Iran didn't want to. And in my conversation with Alistair Crook yesterday, he sort of enlightened me on why. Because Pezeshkian and sort of, they're this group of, let's call them moderate to liberal Iranians. And they actually saw signing a defense pact with the Russia as a real potential irritant with the West, with the United States. And they, they're like this guy that has divorced his wife, still sort of loves her, but she's, you know, she's been doing everything she can to abuse him, and he still thinks he may have a chance to get back together with her. That was Iran. Iran still thought, man, if we can still get along with the West. And now it's blown up in their face. Now they realize that the odds are that the previous president was murdered by a joint Israeli plot out of Azerbaijan, and that this recent attack to decapitate the government was carried out with the full cooperation of the United States, Great Britain, along with Mossad. So now Iran is singing a different tune, and they recognize they're going to have a deeper relationship with Russia. So to that extent, what Putin said this week was, look, we'll supply them with air defense, whatever they need. They just haven't asked for it yet. So, you know, until they, we're not going to go, you know, we're not their mother-in-law. We're not going to go force ourselves on them. You know, if they ask for help, well, help. Very, you know, very matter of fact about it. But China and Russia have been very emphatic with the United States that what Israel did was a violation of international law. What Israel did is a threat to global peace. And the United States better damn well stay out of it. That's their message. Now, that may explain a little bit of Trump's, you know, back and forth, his constant reversals this week. We're going, no, we're not. We're going to wait 2 weeks. Who knows what we're going to do? Because Russia and China, they're not sitting back on the sidelines. They're actively involved.
Okay, so this is, I totally understand that short term is very tricky and it's in constant change and this is a very dynamic event and process. So that all being said, what are the next steps here? Is it continue escalation until the U.S. is involved?
I'll cut to the chase. Yes, it's going to be, the escalation is going to continue because what you're going to see, Iran is going to continue to just blast Israel. You know,
they've had enough.
Israel has never experienced anything like this. Mm-hmm. And notice that Iran is not attacking around the holy city of Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. They're attacking Tel Aviv. They're attacking Haifa. They're attacking Beersheba. They're attacking Dimona. They're attacking the airfield at Nevatim. They're attacking a broad base across Israel, military, going after military, intelligence, and industrial sites. And, you know, they just hit, Microsoft headquarters yesterday or early this morning, East Coast time. And that was connected to the Israel's version of the National Security Agency, Unit 8200. So it's really taken some hits. At some point, Israel's going to be in a desperate, desperate panic situation.
If they're not already.
And I think the pressure from the Congress will be such that, Trump will be compelled to do it, even though there's been, you know, some in his administration, I think Tulsi, at least I hope it's Tulsi, have been warning, don't do it. Now, what's really interesting, have you been tracking sort of the MAGA support crowd that's turning against Trump?
Yeah, I have. I've been listening to Tucker just recently. And also, I find it interesting that Tulsi, as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, she was a part of these decisions or talks.
They shut her out. Candace Owens, Charlie Kirk. I saw a real interesting exchange with, Kirk was talking about how we need to stay out of this war. And this is what led to the collapse of the Roman Empire and the Persian Empire and the rise of the Islamic Caliphate in the 7th century. And Mark Levin wrote him, oh, Charlie, what's happened to you? Come back to our side. Well, you know, Charlie Kirk, to his credit, is intellectually consistent on this. Matt Gaetz, there is strong opposition at a significant level in the Republican Party, that in the Trump MAGA party, against getting involved with any war with Iran whatsoever. Strong. And I saw that firsthand this week. I did a speech on Wednesday before the Manatee County, the Lakewood Ranch Republican Club. And I got into this a little bit. And I was surprised at the end, the number of people that came up to say thank you and that they agreed and that they were really concerned about what Trump is doing.
Yeah, so, tell me those people. Gosh.
Huh?
Count me as one of those people, and but count me as one of those people. I want nothing to do with this.
Yeah, and it is, if Susie Wiles and those who are responsible for tracking actual public opinion are paying attention, they'll know that if Trump attacks Iran, it will be the end of his presidency. Trump, Tucker with Steve Bannon was exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
It will be the end of his presidency, because he will be so politically weakened, he won't have the votes in Congress and the House of Representatives anymore. And frankly, when midterm comes around, there's going to be a lot of Republicans swept out of office because of this.
Yeah. Many things I hope, in this case, I hope you're right. I'm not optimistic. In many cases, I agree with you, but I hope you're wrong, if that makes sense, but I'm not.
Hey, I hope I'm wrong, man.
Yeah. It's really a crazy time here. Let's talk a little bit. I'm really surprised oil has had a huge, a reasonable spike up, but I'm just surprised. Why isn't it much higher with all of this going on? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it goes back to the fact that the calculation that Iran is going to shut down the Straits of Hormuz is ignoring the other political realities that Iran would much prefer to maintain, not create the Saudis, Qataris, and Emiratis as enemies.
Mm-hmm.
They're much better off with coexisting. This, again, the mistake many in the West make is to assume that Iran are these group of blind fanatics. But anybody that's ever sat down and chatted with, Professor Sayed Mohammed Mirandi, I don't know if you've ever had him on your show, but Professor Mirandi, actually, he was born in Ohio, so he's a Buckeye. But he went back to, he was brought here as a child during the Shah's time, because his father, a physician, was being persecuted by the Shah. Then under the Ayatollah, they went back. His father actually became a physician to the Ayatollah. And Sayed, he was wounded twice in the Iran-Iraq War, a chemical weapon wound once. So, he's not one of these airhead academics that talks and has never done things. I mean, he had the balls to be in the service and fight. And so he knows it firsthand. And he's just a reasonable, rational guy, kind of guy you'd sit down and have a beer with or drink a coffee. And he's not a blind ideologue. They're very sensible, very smart. And that tends, Iran is this, it is a great culture that goes back thousands of years. It's one of the few in the world, the Iranians, the Chinese. Hell, when the Russians hang out with the Iranians and Chinese, they're sort of the junior partner in that group in terms of longevity. They only got like 1,000 years under their belt.
Right. Right.
Persia and China's talking 5,000 years and Persia's talking 3,000 years or more, please.
Right.
Here's the United States where, hey, we got 250 years coming up.
Right. Yeah. No, it's silly. I guess the thing is what to look for is just what's next, not only the escalation and the bombs being thrown at each other, but also, I guess, the wild cards are here, just the involvement or the continued involvement in the U.S. and seeing that escalation, as well as the wild card of when does Russia come in and perhaps China come in as well, would you say so?
Yeah, so I'll say when the United States decides to strike, the initial reports will be glorious, great victory, man, we won this, and Iran's defeated. But the truth will be otherwise. It will be, at best, a draw. But Iran's not going to go away. Again, the country's too big, and they're already taking steps to move a lot of their critical military equipment even farther to the east, where it's not as readily attacked as it's now deployed in the west. But the other thing is, it's underground. And, I think the most likely scenario is the United States is going to try to, we'll get one B-2 bomber shot down over Iran. And when that happens, then you've got a big, big problem for Donald Trump.
Yeah, then there's war.
So, because there will be pressure then to expand attacks on Iran. Mm-hmm. And Russia and China have made it clear that if the United States expands those attacks, they have Iran's back. Now, I don't know what that means, what they will do militarily. All I can note is that the Chinese have already deployed two of their naval vessels into the Persian Gulf, making them potential targets. And that if they're attacked, that is going to be seen as an attack on China by the West. And Russia, in its relationship with China, has also told China it's got its back. So this has the potential really to spin out of control, despite the desires of people like Putin and Xi to see what they can do to contain it. I have no longer any confidence in Donald Trump's judgment. His conduct and expressions over the past week have been bizarre and erratic. And he's making claims. He claimed the other day that he just had a conversation with Putin. Then in fact, the Kremlin came out and denied. He said, no, we haven't talked to him for 4 days. Mm-hmm. So who's he having conversations with? When you start having conversations with your imaginary friend, that's called schizophrenia.
Yeah. There's a lot of financial implications, I mean, to say the least, with all of this as well. I mean, the Chinese, I think they're the second largest, if I'm not mistaken, debt holder of U.S. T-bills. And so they can just start dumping T-bills, and you can just imagine what would that do to interest rates in the economy here in the U.S. Again, just thinking about playing this out, just how does this work out? So,
yeah, it is. If you focus much on Tether and that stable coin,
a little bit, yes.
Yeah, because my understanding is now they're doing as much volume outside of the control of the United States as the Fed is.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, but interesting.
I heard it was like $27 trillion they're handling.
Good gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if that's true, again, I don't claim to be a big financial expert, but if that's true, that means that the U.S. ability to control its destiny financially is extremely limited.
Yeah.
And again, that's what this battle is ultimately about between Russia, China, and Iran. This is about preventing the rise of this new world economic order, this multinodal. The Russians and Chinese call it multipolar. I like multinodal. I think it's a more dynamic model of what we're seeing come to light, because the assumption has always been that China needs the United States because we got all the consumers with money that are going to buy their crap, and we discount the ability of all these poor schlubs, the other 3 billion people in the world that don't live in the West, their ability to purchase. But I think what China and Russia are coming to recognize is that the market, the potential future markets, not only in Latin America and South America, but in Africa in particular, is huge. And that as you root out the vestiges of colonial control and the colonial empires, you free those people up that their economies can now start thriving and they can get over the type of corruption that was promoted, supported, and endemic to all these colonial regimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Well, Larry, I've kept you too long. I want to give you my thanks. How do people come and find you if they don't know about you already?
How do they go look at sonar21.com, S-O-N-A-R-21.com. That's the mothership. And you can get to all my other links from there.
Excellent. I will put all of this in the show notes below on the YouTube channel, as well as the Apple and Spotify channels. Larry, again, I want to thank you. You are one of my handful of people that I trust and go to in situations like this. Unfortunately, this is playing out as you have suggested over the past several months. And I'm regretful of that, actually. Here we are. And it's just, to say the least, it's a scary time. And it's how do you do this? It's very dynamic. It's very dynamic, constantly changing. Yeah.
The pucker factor is high. I always used to say when the pucker factor got great, that if you had a bag of coal, you stuffed it up your rear end, you could have diamonds.
Right.
Let's hope we enter a phase where we don't make as many diamonds, okay?
That's right. Larry, I want to thank you so much for your time. I'd love to have you on again very soon as this process unwinds and, well, perhaps escalates. And
anytime, Andy, I'm always, as I said, honored by that you think I'm even worth talking to. So
thank you very much, Larry. Take care.
All right, my friend. Take care. You have a great day.
You too.